This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back to another episode of Just a Tip. I'm your host, Megan Batoon, and today I'm so excited for this episode. I had such a blast talking to Amy Chan. She's the founder of Renew Breakup Bootcamp, which is a retreat that takes a scientific and spiritual approach to heal the heart. She is also the editor-in-chief of Heart Hackers Club, which is an online magazine that focuses on the psychology behind lust, love, and desire. She is so chock full of information and experiences and just like a well-rounded person to be able to speak to this. We talk about the science of love, processing our emotions, how the media influences our thoughts on romance. It's such a wonderful and insightful episode. I hope you enjoy it. And without further ado, here it is. Oh my God, my pimple. I never get acne. And it's just so interesting because like, I was mentioning, like, I'm basically living two lives right now, one in Los Angeles and then, like, renovating this home in the desert. And so I'm just like, oh, yeah, my body is revolting against me because it's so difficult. But actually, that's such a nice little segue into some of the questions I had. Obviously, I have so many to ask about, you know, the scientific and spiritual approach that you take to breakups and kind of getting back on your feet and self-discovery. But I think before I get into all that, because it's going to be so juicy, me just mentioning like my two lives right now, you came from a completely different background before you started this like self-love, self-empowerment, breakup boot camp type of Heart Hackers Club, all this stuff. You were, 15 years you were working in marketing?
Yeah. So I did the route my Chinese parents really want me to do, which is like get a respectable job. And they wanted me to be a lawyer, but I didn't. So I went down the marketing route. And yeah, I was the chief marketing officer of the ping pong club Spin. Okay. And but I had always written on the side. I was a relationship columnist for about 12 years. And it was, you know, the area that I loved doing because it was an area I kept failing in. Like I was constantly heartbroken. So I was like, okay, if I could figure out the science of it, then maybe I'll finally get this relationship thing right.
Right. Oh, wow. I love that. You're like, let's like do the root cause. Let's not treat the symptoms. We are going to the source.
Yes.
Okay. So what did that look like? Like when you were writing on the side for how long within those 15 years?
Yeah. So my first article was, it was another breakup, and I published an article. I think it was on like a MySpace back then. Okay. And I had a lot of people reach out and say, this really helped me. And I was like, oh, like maybe I'm a writer. So I pitched that article to over 100 publications. Most ignored me. Some said, you don't have any credentials. Mm. And one newspaper, it was a local Vancouver newspaper, said, okay, we'll do it a guest shot column. I was like, all right, that went well. And then eventually I got a weekly column with them and I wrote for them for 7 years.
Okay.
But I just kept doing that. I would get published in one publication that would help me with the next one. And it was this, and I created my own blog. So I started to just really create my content and put myself out there and all of my dating woes and vulnerabilities. I was like, no one's talking about this stuff and other people are going through it. So maybe there's a reason for all of this hardship I'm having in love.
Right. Wow. Okay. Love that so much. So then you're writing for 7 years. When did you take the leap from your, you know, I come from also a Filipino background. So that Asian culture is very much like be a doctor, be a lawyer, be a nurse, do anything, you know, that's kind of secure. Obviously I'm an artist. And so I went a different route as well. And so I'm wondering when you felt like you were able to transition fully from, you know, something that was a little bit more stable, being like the CMO, to writing is a creative job. So it's like, you don't know exactly when the next paycheck is coming. When did you feel like you could make that leap?
Yeah. So I took a path of de-risking the path of entrepreneurship until I was ready to take a jump. Mm-hmm. And it was hard because I was living in New York City and all of my friends were entrepreneurs with 5 side hustles. And the sentiment at that time in my peer group was like, you know, chase your dreams, screw the man. And I was like, but how am I going to pay for my apartment? And
like, I need the man a little bit.
Yeah. So I had the idea to create a breakup bootcamp. And I was, you know, preparing for it for like 2 years and I just wasn't launching. And finally, through the push of a friend of mine, I finally launched my first bootcamp while I was working as CMO. And I told my boss about it. I was like, this is another side project of mine. And they're like, fine, go ahead, do it. And I launched my breakup bootcamp and I got a ton of press from it. So from that press, I had an agent, United Talent, contact me and I had no idea how this stuff worked. When they emailed me, I'm like, do you want my money? They're like, no, you know, we represent Kanye West. Just grab him for a meeting. And that's when they're like, look, like no one owns a breakup space. You're so good at what you do. Like, let's start with a book. And so with that in my back pocket, I was like, okay, like I'm a little bit more ready now because I'm working on a book deal. And I basically gave myself 6 months. I saved up money. I called my mom. I'm like, look, I'm going to do this thing. I'll have like 3 months of living expenses. Okay. And if I absolutely fail, can you help me out? Or worst case, can I come home and move into your basement? And she's like, I support you. So with
that's awesome.
I did it.
Yeah. Wow. Having someone support you is so helpful, or just like support you if something went, you know, awry, because anything could happen. Like, especially when you're transitioning careers, it is a huge risk and you are kind of like, all right, like, am I making the absolute wrong decision from like getting away from something that, you know, I have comfort in, I have a place to sleep and I have everything covered. Now I'm just kind of gonna like throw it up just to see if it's better. And like most of the time, like, it is better if you're following your dream. And so I love that you had the support of your family through that.
Yeah. And I, the questions I asked myself throughout this process, because I was petrified. I mean, when you've been so trained to work on salary and have a paycheck, it's really hard to leave that comfort for the unknown.
Yeah.
And I asked myself, if not now, when? Like, when am I actually going to do this dream of mine that I've had? And number two, what's the worst thing that could happen? The worst thing is I live in my mom's basement and she's like cooking me dinners and she's a pretty good cook. Okay, that's not that bad.
Right.
So that's what really helped me. I'm like, I just got to do it. And at the end of the day, I also had a skill set. So if everything just didn't work out, I could always go back into the job market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So once you launched your book, tell me about that process. Like, I have never written a book before. I listen to a ton of podcasts about people that have written books. I don't think it would be right for me. It seems so difficult. Like, I would rather like, you know, make a house than make a book. I mean, they're both two huge endeavors. But like, what was the process like of writing this book? You were writing on the column, so you had your lane. And yeah, how did that go?
So yeah, the very first step was writing a proposal. And this is fascinating because the proposal is written to sell the book. So that's not necessarily what's going to end up being the book. And that was really hard for me. So I had probably 8 different drafts. I remember at one point my agent's like, ugh, I need a retreat reading this proposal. I'm exhausted. I'm like, oh my gosh. And I'm like, I'm a bad writer. So I went through this whole thing of like, I'm not good enough. I can't do this. And eventually I actually hired someone to help me with the proposal process to just keep me on track because my ideas were everywhere.
Right.
And I I finished the proposal and I got really lucky. So my boot camp was featured on the front page of the New York Times.
Nice.
And I was in LA at the time, and my friend Neil Strauss, who you might have heard, he wrote The Game and then The Truth. He had a dinner and he's like, hey, you should come to this dinner. So I'm like, all right, I went. And it was the publisher of HarperCollins.
Wow.
And while we were talking, she's like, wait, were you just in the paper about that book? I'm like, yeah, that was me. And without a moment, she's like, I want your book. Give me
Amazing.
Your book. And so that was kind of like the start of it. And we didn't even pitch to other publishers afterwards. My agent just struck a deal with Harper's, and then that process happens. So you get an editor and then your book completely changes.
Right. Yeah. Completely. I know. I think I one time was like, yeah, I'll write a book, like not knowing anything. And then when it came to the literary agent being like, here's, you need a proposal. I'm like, okay, well, I have to work backwards. So let me write the book first and then I can give you the proposal, because then I'll know like what it is. Right. It's a lot. Okay. So one quick question before we keep going there. Do you feel like you, as a, I guess like as a budding writer or someone that's going into a new space, do you think that it's necessary to have people that are already on in the ground floor, like Neil? Like, how did you meet that contact? Like, were you in the right places at the right time, or how did that go?
Yeah, even without my friend, I would have gotten a book deal, because what would happen is your agent will then pitch it out. And the publishers will bid on the deal. It really helps if you have press. It really helps if you have an agent. There are some people that go the self-publishing route, but I really wanted to be with a traditional publisher. There's also a certain sense of credibility that comes with that I really wanted. Mm-hmm. And but at the end of the day, you basically are responsible for selling your book. It's really different now. And so if you have an audience, if you're engaging your community, you need to take time. I took 3 months just to market and promote the book, and that still wasn't enough. So, and I'm constantly still doing it. So it's like a never ending job, but yeah, really there's so many different ways to go about it. For anyone listening who's curious about writing a book, just write every single day, because what that really helped me, I took a lot of my blogs and I used some of that content and I shaped the book, but I didn't have to start from complete like zero.
Yeah. And that helps so much with your marketing background. And that's what I love about kind of, you know, following whatever your creativity and curiosity is leading you to, is like one thing is prepping you for the next thing. So like you already writing all this stuff for your column, like that's helped get you to the next place. And the marketing brought you to this place. It's just so cool how everything works out if you look at it that way.
Yeah, for sure. It does connect I think you have to constantly brush yourself off after every setback. I mean, look how many, I get rejected all the time to this day. But now I don't just take it as like, oh my gosh, I'm not worth it. I'll have the thought, but I just don't feed that thought.
Yes.
And I think that's really a big difference, is you learn to build a muscle of not taking every rejection personally as if it's a slight on you as a human being.
Right. I think that something that really helped me, my friend came up with this concept that I thought was so genius, but he was saying to think about all the thoughts in your mind like people of a town hall meeting. And if you're the mayor, like you can listen to all of these naysayers, or this guy that wants like the road repaved and like doesn't think you're good enough to have a mailbox or whatever. And so he's like, you can, these voices come in, but you don't have to do anything about it because you are the one in charge. Like you're the chief officer. So it's like, yeah, you can be a naysayer and say like, you're not worth it. You're not good enough. No one cares, blah, blah, blah. And then you're like, I hear you, but we're actually going to write the book anyway.
I love that. Yes.
Yeah. It was so illuminating. And I always think about that too, because I think that we are so, you know, if we don't train our mind, like you said, like have a set, like strength in who we are, then it is so easy to fall into those and trust those voices as if they are fact.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so now that we have the business side out of the way, that was so interesting to me. I always, like, as a half artist, half entrepreneur, it's kind of muddy here now in the modern world because you have to be both.
Yeah.
It's really hard. You can't just make art and make money with just making art, because there has to be a business side to it. You have to sell your paintings. You have to do this thing. And it's, yeah, I mean, that's why I also think it's a great idea that you had gotten someone to help with the proposal, because, you know, as a highly creative people, it's really hard to, you know, hone in and get exactly what you need, especially to people that could be, you know, suits in the industry of like, I don't care, just show me the paper and show me what the chapters will be like. And you're like, but what about everything in the chapters? But okay, so you have been writing about breakups since the column. The relationship column.
Yeah, not specifically breakups, relationships. A lot of the science and psychology behind love, lust, and desire. And I've been running my retreats, breakup bootcamp, for now 6 years. Mm. So I'm, you know, everything I do now is on breakups.
Yeah. So when you were starting to write about relationships and looking into the psychology and the science of it, where did you turn to learn all of this stuff?
I mean, everything, right? So there's like a combination of my own experience. So I use myself as like a test, you know, a tester of all these things. And I really, you know, what sparked even specializing in breakups was my own breakup. Like I had a really traumatic breakup where my entire world fell apart because I put so much of my identity in him and in us. Mm-hmm. And so I had a really hard time bouncing back from that. And therapy, Reiki, yoga riches, you name it, I tried it. And I would immerse myself in different types of, you know, mythology. So I use a lot of cognitive behavioral therapy. So CBT, DBT, I'm always kind of looking at, you know, what's the latest in the research. Things are changing. The Gottmans are really good. I really like, you know, scientific based, really mm-hmm. practical tools versus like, just love yourself or happen for a reason. Like I can't stand those platitudes. Yeah. Like they're so unhelpful. I want to know like the how to do system. It. Yes.
Yeah. Like show me the results and I'll do it. Yeah. I completely get that. And I think that that's so important because all those platitudes are out there and they are, you know, at some point it is true, but it's like until you can feel it and understand that, it's not going to compute.
Right.
It's like, yeah, love yourself, but how? Right. Like I now thankfully love myself, but before I did, it was like, what am I supposed to do? You just tell me to do it? Okay. How? Okay. So, I love that so much. So you basically immerse yourself into all of these different modalities to learn and then incorporated that into everything that you are writing about. And then you just found your flock, you found your crew. How did that happen? Was that, you know, instantaneous or was it kind of picking up steam as you did it?
Yeah. I mean, when I first started my breakup boot camps, it was a team of like five. So I knew exactly what type of a program I wanted. And so I worked with an anxiety coach. I worked with a mind hacker, worked with a psychologist. I worked with a tantra teacher. And then it started to grow every single retreat. And now the team's 13 different experts, all the best of the best in their area. Mm. So I'll bring in a psychologist that specializes in helping shifting subconscious beliefs. Then I'll have another psychologist who works on grief and death and love. And then I'll bring in a breathwork teacher. Then I'll bring in someone who does somatic healing. And I even bring in a dominatrix who has a PhD from Berkeley who teaches on power dynamics.
Oh my God, wait, I'm in. Like I was already like so interested when I was like looking up everything about you and your programs, but now hearing that I'm like, "Oh, it's like it's 360 empowering, healing, holistic approach to it." And I love that so much.
Yeah, and it's super fun and it's 4 days. It's like in, you know, it's in nature. It's super luxurious. There's an on-site chef and team, and she's also a nutritionist. So you're eating really well, but you know, you're in programming from 9 a.m. until 10 p.m. and every session is like, it's hour after hour. And we do a combination. So there's going to be, the psychologist will lead a session, but after that, there'll be something that gets you into your body and how do you move trauma and emotion through the body? So it's really an approach that takes into account the heart, mind, body, spirit, and soul.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's so interesting. I was reading, there's like a FAQ on your website and it's a ton of like helpful questions. And now that I hear that, that makes so much sense because you're going, I mean, you are paying attention to every single part of healing. Like, it, mind, body, spirit is, of course, connected, but heart and soul, adding that is so great. So my question is, and I know this was one of the questions on the site, but this would be nice for the listeners, is do you have to be in a heartbreak situation in order to get something out of this program? It seems like no, but I want you to hear from you.
No, because it's never just about the ex, it's recycled pain. And people will go to a, you know, my breakup bootcamp retreat or read the book because usually they're in pain from a breakup or they're disappointed in love or something like that. The pain is a catalyst. But what they find is throughout the program is a lot of it is about what are these subconscious beliefs that have been kicking around for decades that's really running the show, right? It's like the program that's running everything. And there sometimes we need to kind of debug it a bit because we don't question the beliefs. We don't even know we have them or these certain patterns or why are we drawn to people who are unhealthy for us and why do we stay? And it's not because there's something wrong with you or because you're broken, but there's some things going on usually that you're not aware of and they just need a little bit of tweaking. And when you do that and you have some tools, you shift, you know, you shift just a few degrees and you end up in a completely different destination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember going to a self-development seminar one time, maybe like 5 years ago, and the instructor was talking about one of his friends that was like a really high, highly respected surgeon. And he was saying that a lot of the people that would come into his clinic would be like, I want, you know, a completely new nose. And he would say like, absolutely not. Like, I will only work within 2 millimeters of what you already naturally have. Because when you try to do too much of an extreme shift, it's so unnatural, but it will probably just like not even work. And, or you won't be recognizable to yourself. Like, it won't even look good. So he was always like, it's usually just a tweak that we need. You don't need to, you know, change everything. It's just a little bit of a rewire and that's it. It's just, okay, you know, fasten a bolt or like a new nut is all you need.
Yeah. It sounds like what you're saying is it's not an entire overhaul and
Yeah. Which I mean, it seems like I remember I had like one breakup that just like absolutely bodied me. I remember that it was unhealthy. I'm saying obviously to me, but like, you don't know this guy, but like it was tumultuous in the fact that I was equating chaotic energy with passion. And because that's how I grew up, it was like, oh, if it's, you know, if it hurts, it's love, because love makes you do crazy things. And if you're acting irrationally, you must be in love. Right. And like, that's not true.
No. I mean, it's also what we're indoctrinated from the fairy tales we see to Sex and the City, to Bridgerton, to like Life, right? It's like this, the storyline of love is one of intensity, of extreme highs and lows, of fighting for attention or fighting for time, overperforming and earning it, being chosen out of a sea of other people. And like, even if you're aware that you're just watching television or reading stories, it's hammered into you like daily. And I mean, it does impact you. And I see the results of this, of so many people heartbroken, chasing unavailability or feeling comfortable in chaos. And that when something does, like stable and secure does come along, they're like, oh, I don't feel any chemistry.
Totally. Wait, I would love to hear more about that, because when I first got into the current relationship that I'm in, like truly my partner had never called a boyfriend a partner before because they have never been a partner. Because it was always like it, the reason why I use the term partner is just because it really just feels so much more like a team. And we're both there to help each other like become our highest selves, and like we're there to mirror each other and to like usher each other into like the lives that we want. Whereas before it was like jealousy and, you know, keeping things from people, or like changing the name of someone in your phone so that when they looked at it they wouldn't be like, why are you talking to this person? Like, just stuff that is just so unhealthy. But I'd love to hear a little bit more about like healthy relationships, how they feel different than what we are indoctrinated with of, you know, love being painful.
Yeah, there's a concept I talk about in my book called the chemistry compass. And this is our internal GPS that points us into the direction of who we're drawn to and who we're repulsed by. And if we didn't have a healthy model of what love looks like and feels like growing up, what happens is we develop what's called an attraction of deprivation, meaning we are drawn to what's familiar, and our psyche tries to subconsciously recreate the scenario of the scene of the crime in an attempt to change its ending. So for example, like with me, I had a father who, he was a business guy. He, you know, Chinese immigrant, building his business. He was never around, emotionally unavailable. And the only time I got attention was when I got good grades. I would get $40. Yeah.
Same.
And I learned.
Except not 40. I didn't get 40. Wow. I got like 5, but... It was still good.
But like, you know, what is that lesson we learn, right? Like, so for me, I learned like, oh, achievement equals love. And yes. I would get attention. And so I became a super little achiever since I was young. And I was so used to pining over someone's time, hoping that if I just do this well enough, then maybe I'll get that. I'll get that token of love. And I didn't recognize that this was a pattern playing out in my romantic relationships, because the people looked very different, but the emotional experience was always the same. Anxiety, always chasing, always wanting to be chosen, waiting to be chosen. And now that I've, you know, done all this work and I've kind of researched all of this, and I'm also in a very healthy partnership, I've recognized like, oh, healthy love is, it's peaceful.
Yeah. Oh.
You're not constantly obsessively thinking about them all day long and wondering if they are committed to you or, you know, any of that stuff, because you just know in your body, and your nervous system doesn't feel like it's on a survival state at all times.
Yeah, I just always think about the brain cells that opened up when I got into a healthy relationship, that I was like, oh, I don't have to worry anymore. Like, it just, it is so different. And like, obviously, it took a lot of therapy and self-work and awareness to get to this point. But I remember when I first got into my first healthy relationship, it started to just be like, is this love? Because like, I'm not on the edge of my seat all the time. I'm not, you know, feeling like the fires of passion being like, I'm like, oh, it's just safe.
Yeah.
Oh. And I had heard like good love. I don't know what they said, but like healthy love could be like sometimes feel boring when you're used to this roller coaster of emotions.
Yeah. I mean, there's also different chemicals at play. So something to understand is in the very beginning of new romance, we're flooded with love drugs, right? We're just high on love drugs, and namely dopamine, which is the neurotransmitter of more. So dopamine makes you motivated to get more of whatever it is that you want. Now, what happens is eventually, in a relationship, if you continue dating and things are a lot more stable and it's consistent, the chemicals start to change. So you go in from the passionate stage of love to the companionate stage of love. So the brain transitions from like this future oriented dopamine to present oriented chemicals. They're called the here and now chemicals, namely oxytocin and serotonin. Those make you appreciate the present, but it's a lot more peaceful. It's a lot more grounded. The reason why you also feel this kind of crazy angst and this, like, it could be this excitement that could be confused with lust and love, is when you don't know when you're going to get the reward, you get a bigger hit of dopamine. So it's the same thing that happens with people playing a slot machine. Unpredictable rewards get you hooked. So you get hooked in this addictive cycle. And then when you do finally get that reward and you don't know when it's coming, it's a huge hit of dopamine. And so that is what keeps you playing the slot machine or staying in these hot, cold relationships with people. And it's very easy to mistaken that for love when it's really just an activated attachment system.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that is one of the most pivotal things that everyone should hear, because that's not what we're taught. I mean, like, you have to go searching a little bit in order to get that information. You know, it is not spoon-fed to us. It's not in Disney movies. Like, this is... this might be the first time that people are ever hearing about something like that. And so I think it's so vital. And you had an article on Heart Hackers Club that I thought was really cool. I think the title of it was, you'll just know when you meet the one, and how that's bullshit. Yeah. Like, yeah, when you know, essentially, which I've been hearing for my entire life. I'm like, when you know, I'm like, but do I know? I think I know. And then I don't. Like, oh my God, am I ever in love? Like, I don't know.
No, like 27 times. I would be like, oh my God. I would text my sister. I'm like, no. I think I met the one. And she's like, but you just said that about like that other guy, that DJ that had like, you know, a cocaine problem. You thought the other one. No. This one is different. Like, he's an old soul. No.
Oh my gosh.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Yeah. That's so funny. I mean, I think that we put so much emphasis on finding the one, where it's like, I don't think at this point in my life, I don't think that that is a very helpful thought process, because if you think that you're finding the one, you could miss so many other opportunities that you weren't, you know, watering to make that grass greener. But also if you're in a relationship and you're like, is this the one? You're always looking for something else. And so you're not physically, emotionally, cerebrally present. You're just kind of like acting and seeing like, okay, I'm here for now until something else comes along that's better.
Yeah, it's totally not helpful. And the thing is, like you said, a partnership, it's not just based on your feelings of the day. There's going to be moments in the partnership relationship where you're not having sex. You know, you're so annoyed with them. But if you have this like, oh, the one, and I'm supposed to feel like so in love and passion all the time, you're not living in reality. And that is a problem. It's this fantasy-based world and that's what we're learning a lot about relationships. It's what we're watching and consuming. And that's just not reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think of The Notebook when you talk about that, about just, she sticks her tongue out. It's just like, I remember loving that movie. And then like, the more I watch it and the more I even watch Sex and the City, I'm like, wow, Carrie needs therapy. Like there's so many, like every time I watch something that I loved growing up, I'm like, oh, this power dynamic is off. This is not how it is. That's romanticizing. That's gaslighting. It's just like, there's so much going on in the media that we are conditioned with from such a young age to make this so much harder to understand like what partnership actually is.
Yeah. And like what you said about Sex and the City, like that was my dream. Like Carrie Bradshaw was like, I'm going to be Carrie, right? I'm like, that encouraged me to write. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to meet a really rich business guy and I'm going to write on the side for fun. And like, that was a plan and I got it. And yeah. That was a really brutal breakup of mine. And I just wanted to be someone's plus one. Mm-hmm. And like, I had to really like break down to break free of these ideas that were in my head that were totally unhealthy. And like, you know, now that I'm out of it, it's like, no, like I don't want to be someone's plus one. Like you can be my plus one, but I'm not going to be yours. Like I'm going to build my own life, build my own awesomeness. I'm not going to rely on someone else to, you know, give me housing, give me clothes, buy my friggin' Manolos. No.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, like, I am the one. Like, I'm not finding the one. I am the one.
Yeah.
100%. How long did it take you when you were, I know this is different for everyone, but I'm just interested in your process, before you were able to, you know, help everybody with the other side of it. Like when you were going through your breakup, how long would you say that like that process took of self-discovery and therapy and all the modalities that you used?
Yeah. So the intensity of that breakup, I would say in around 6 months is when it started to subside. Like the first 3 months were just brutal, mm-hmm. but 6 months I was like a functioning person again. And although I would have some relapses when I got triggered, but even 2 years later, I was fine. I was dating. I moved, you know, to New York from Vancouver, and I still was angry. I had bitterness and resentment. So I don't think that really ended until 2.5 years. And I didn't start my business until a couple years after that. Mm-hmm. So
when you are experiencing anger, I guess now too, but back then as well, that's something that I'm actually working on in therapy right now. And it's a very confusing emotion to me because it was never safe. It was never accessible when I was in childhood. It just, you know, grin and bear it, kind of just like always clenching my jaw. And so I'm interested to, how did you, what was your outlet like for the anger emotion?
Yeah. So I think, Megan, what you're saying, a lot of women identify with, and it's definitely in the research that women are at a very young age, and I'm sure it's a little different now, taught to that anger is not okay, but sadness is. So you can cry, but you can't get mad because like that's very, you know, unladylike. And so I still have a hard time accessing anger. Like mm-hmm. I have to really sit with it and be like, what do I feel right now? Where is it? Okay. And allow myself to feel it because I'll automatically turn it to sadness without even knowing.
Right.
I think what would happen is it just came out in resentment, which is low grade aggression. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, to this day, I notice when the resentment's coming up and I just stop, I'm like, okay, what's going on here? Am I overgiving? Am I acting in a codependent way? Where is there a lack of balance? Where am I not communicating something? Mm-hmm. And I just sit with it. And what I've learned about emotions is I used to be very impulsive. So whatever I felt, it was like hot potato, right? I would throw it. I would either blame someone. I would try to get someone to fix it with someone's problem. And now I've learned like, okay, feel the emotion. Don't judge it as good or bad. I allow myself to feel all of it. And I'm like, oh, I'm just expanding my emotional range. Mm-hmm. Because if you can't feel the dark, you can't feel the light. Mm-hmm. It, you know, it's one or the other. And there's other things that I do that really help, from flow state journal writing, where you set a time for 10 minutes.
Yeah, tell me more.
And you just put your pen to paper and you just start, I feel. That's it. You just keep going and you let whatever come out. It could be like, I feel blah, blah, blah. And then the eggs are green and I don't know, but you let it all out. And it's actually research-based. It helps you actually minimize the sting of the emotions. And it also helps you debug. So it's also like what's floating around in your subconscious. It allows some of it to come out and it's a form of release.
Right. I love that. I know that there is a similar practice in the book, The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron, but that's called Morning Pages. For anyone listening, I think I maybe mentioned this in a previous episode, but essentially you set your timer for 30 minutes or you write 3 pages physically, pen and paper, and exactly the same, just kind of like put all of your thoughts on paper in the morning so you can, you know, just like get it out and focus on, it's like everything that... It's almost like a rollover thoughts from like the night before. It's like you have rollover thoughts and you just want to get them out so that you can start the day fresh. But I like that, your approach, because it starts with an I feel. So you've got a prompt instead of with morning pages. It's just kind of like whatever is happening. And I like starting with I feel because I think that just gets directly to what's actually happening. And it kind of cuts out the small talk of your brain.
Yeah. And the reason why writing I feel or even saying I feel is helpful, it's also research-based that it helps people, especially people who have a hard time identifying their emotions. It does minimize the sting and the emotional charge of the emotion. So in the research, it shows that people who do I feel statements tend to feel less stress. So there's less of a stress response. So that's why it's super helpful. Another really great hack is doing a state change. So whether it's anger you're feeling or anxiety, something to understand is your body is being flooded with cortisol and adrenaline. So it's preparing you for fight, flight, or freeze. And it basically thinks it's being under attack by a tiger, even though it's not. It might've been some crappy email or you didn't hear back on a text message, whatever it is. So you can't think your way out of it. So what you do is you set your timer for 2 minutes and you shake your body head to toe. What this will do is it'll help metabolize the stress hormones. So then you can actually have some coherent thought afterwards.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's very similar to something else that I was reading in an Ayurvedic book was about shaking emotion out. And that's so interesting that there, whether it's Eastern medicine or Western philosophy, there's so many modalities that are shared, but just kind of repackaged in different ways, which is essentially, you know, my idea of religion. It's all the same water, different rivers. However right. you want to get there, it's the same exact thing. It's just packaged in a different way. So yeah. I love that. I've never actually tried. I think I tried yesterday shaking some emotion. My therapist was like, okay, just shake. And I was like, okay. We were like just shaking together. It was very interesting. But I think there is something to that because as we are learning, the body holds so much more than we are ever aware of. And the body doesn't lie. Like I have recently, I guess this is a little vulnerable, but I think it's worth sharing, is like so much stress and going through so many changes that I have like stopped getting my period. And that is something that is alarming to me. And so doing a lot of work and trying to like return to my body and give it the rest, give it everything that it needs, you know, even something down to the to just like when I have to go to the bathroom, go. Don't hold it for any reason, which I was doing before because I was like, oh, I'll hold it. You know, I'll finish editing this video. I'll record that podcast. Or, you know, especially what we were talking about earlier about kind of like our value being equated to our achievements, our accomplishments.
Our output.
Yes, right. And so, and having money attached to that, it's like whenever I'm in therapy, it's like, oh, I have to go to the bathroom. But if I go to the bathroom, that's like what, $250. That's okay. So it's taking out. And I'm like doing the math of like, how much money is this going to cost me to go to the bathroom?
Oh my God, I'm so the same.
It's a lot.
Gotta get that value for that dollar.
I know. It's just so much. But yeah, I mean, it's that's the journey is like understanding that like we have to work with our body and with what was imprinted in our minds, which, you know, that mentality of money and equating that to everything, that wasn't my belief. But that's what, you know, that was the gift that I was given. And now I've got to repackage that into something that's actually useful and beneficial to me.
Mm.
That's so funny that you have a similar experience. I have another question. It basically, one of your articles, it was like every header was like, yes, that should be like its own saying. But like one of the subtitles in, I think the same article that I was talking about, the one you know, or like when the saying you know is just bullshit. You had written from falling in love to standing in love. And I love that so much because I feel like in my past relationships, I always did feel like I was falling. But in this one, it feels like I am like landing or like not even being caught. Like I'm just like, I'm landing softly and I'm not just like, it's not Tower of Terror. It's like, oh, I'm like Alice in Wonderland with like her skirt, just like, you know, gently putting her down onto the ground.
I love the visual. yeah. Right. Like I think that falling in love narrative is one we've also seen. It's just like, I just can't control it. It's just so amazing. And you're like floating. And there's aspects of that. I totally believe it in like the romantic, passionate beginning stage and also spurts in the relationship. But like, yeah, standing in love is so much more interesting to me because that actually takes skill, right? Like the other part, falling in love, it takes nothing. You could do that over and over again with different people. It's just emotions. It's just chemicals. But standing in love, that is working on your communication skills. It is dealing with the uncomfortable conversation, the boundary you need to set, not taking on someone else's emotions, even if you have a tendency to feel guilt, right? Like giving them space and trying not to control or turn them into you. Like all of those things, they're skills that you build. And it's this choice of investing in the partnership and also investing in your own growth that happens within that partnership. So I think that's a model that we should really be striving for versus just falling in love with someone, which is totally just emotional based of the day.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think once I got into this relationship, I understood that you know, my relationship with myself is equally as important as the one with him. And the same for him. Like I remember in my past relationships, I didn't want to change them, but like I did. Like I wanted them to like, I don't want to change you, but if you could just do this instead and do that and touch me there and say that, it's like, okay, all these things where it's like in this partnership, it feels like we are both on our individual growth journeys and together we are like challenging each other's past selves to get better. And I think that is, I wish that was taught a little bit more. And I don't know if that will be taught. I don't know if that will make a good movie, but like, I mean, because that's where we're getting all of our information for the most part is Disney movies and princesses being rescued and all these, you know, Netflix and every single movie that's made that has, I mean, I do, there's some, I'm not a writer, but like, I know that there's some sort of, I don't think it's like a law, but like something where like you can, wow, I like truly don't know what I'm talking about, which is hilarious. But like,
I don't know if it's a law or if it's a show or it's what I ate in the morning, but yeah.
But there totally is profound. Something so funny, but like one of my writer friends was saying that like, there's something in the writing world that if you don't have like a male savior counterpart, then like you can like win an award or something. I will look it up later. But essentially it's like, that's where writing is going, is a little bit away from that like heteronormative, old archaic way of thinking of being saved. And that like, there can be like a female lead that doesn't need a male counterpart. And so right. I know that that's like in the works because I heard it from her. Obviously, can't retain the information, but like I do think that that's really helpful. I just hope that the media can kind of reflect what we are. I mean, at least like the self-healers are learning of like, oh, that's not helpful anymore. Like, let's stop feeding that to the masses. But I mean, I guess there's a reason why it's being made. Like maybe it sells. I don't know. Maybe people like the thought of being saved by somebody else. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, there's like this kind of like a thing that works on television, right? Like even like, look, I haven't really talked about this, but I'm working on pitching a show and nice. The feedback has been, well, where's the drama?
Right.
Right. And they're like, well, look at what's selling. And I'm right. like, F-Boy Island's doing great. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like what is out there? And like, it's these gamified social experiments where it's like, it's just, there's drama, there's fighting, there's backstabbing, there's choosing. It's, I don't know. I really do hope that media does start to shift. And I think we're seeing it. I think we have a long way to go. And yeah. I think that's why having these conversations and people listening to this, this is helpful. All these little bits of information are helpful in shifting our perspectives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember I had done, I remember long ago, like literally last year I was on this show, where we traveled the world and it was like three of us and this ensemble cast and there was no drama. It was just like the beautiful places you could stay in the world. And we talk about the culture and the food and the design of it all. Like I was like, there needs to be more wholesome reality shows. Like, yeah. Wouldn't that be nice? Like, how yes. about I guess that's why I like the home renovation space, because there's never, the biggest drama would be like, there's dry rot, or like, you know, like, okay, we have to redo this entire room. Okay. But like, nobody's getting emotionally triggered. Like, nobody's hurting each other maliciously. Like, that's, I just want more positivity in the world, but even not toxic positivity, but just like being aware of what's happening and not adding drama just to get the views. Like, I just, that's not something that I feel, I don't resonate with that anymore.
Yeah.
And I guess I did watch F-Boy Island, and like, I, like, I watched it, but like, I'm not trying to be on it. Oh my God. Okay. Before we wrap up, I want to know a little bit more about, since you've been researching this for so long, you've been helping so many people. I would love if you could share like a few really helpful tips that you've found in this journey for healthy relationship patterns, whether that's with yourself or with others.
Yeah. So I'll start with the one for anyone who still feels resentment towards your ex or still trying to get closure. And sometimes trying to get closure is like years. Here's the thing. If you're still blaming your ex, vilifying your ex, psychoanalyzing your ex, hoping for your ex to change or to give you closure, you're still in a relationship with your ex. You're basically in a relationship with someone who's not in a relationship with you.
Oof.
And that emotional charge, the energy that's moving towards the ex and trying to figure out your ex, is actually detracting from you being able to move forward. So, you know, when you have those conversations with friends, and they want to get together and they want to support you, and then call them a narcissist or whatever it is, know that it's not helping you. It's like having junk food. It feels good for a moment, and overall, it doesn't help you. The emotional charge keeps you hooked. I would say the second thing is, if you have a history of, not a lot of success in your relationships, they're unhealthy, they hurt, then that's a sign that your chemistry compass might be a bit off. And so that means when you feel that 10 out of 10 chemistry with someone, when you lock eyes with someone at a bar, you're like, oh my gosh, like that's the one, that's typically a red flag, not a green light. And it's usually signaling to you that your subconscious is picking up that they can wound you in a very familiar way than as what you're used to.
Wow.
And so understand that if that's the case, you need to actually expose yourself to healthy and secure people first in your friend group, your immediate peer group. And this is who you're exposed to on a regular basis, mm-hmm. and having more high safety relationships, because that will actually wire your neural pathways of trust and healthy connection. And then giving a chance to people who you would normally find boring, because the more you're exposed to people who are healthy and secure, the more you'll be familiar with that. And again, human beings are drawn to what's familiar. Mm-hmm. The next thing I would say is I think it's really important for you, whether you're in a relationship or you're not, get really clear on what your values are, and use that as your compass, because your emotions are going to change. And if you are dating, whether you're single or you're in a relationship, if you don't know what your values are, it's your agenda is going to be determined by someone else's, mm-hmm. and you're just going to go with whoever's going to be more dominant or more persuasive. But if you have values, you'll stick to that, even if it's uncomfortable, because you know, that's your GPS. You follow that, and the right person for you will not require you to abandon your values. Mm-hmm. So stop making excuses that cause you to betray yourself. And then my last thing I'd love to say is, for those of you listening who have been hurt, and I'm sure many of you have had your heart broken or bruised, know that like there's tools out there where you can get back up. There is a science to it, and the pain isn't going to last forever. And the coping mechanisms we had to use when we were children to survive, it was because we had to. And a lot of the times those coping mechanisms, those defense mechanisms aren't helping us mm-hmm. as adults anymore. So really get honest on what's working and what's not. And remember that, you know, the stronger you get, you actually get softer, yeah. not harder. And our our greatest lesson in this lifetime is to practice opening our hearts, even when it hurts, especially when it hurts. So if you get rejected, whether it's, you know, you're pitching your book or your show or a relationship or whatever it is, and you want to just close up and be like, I'm not going to do this anymore. I hate doing this. Like, just remember, this is your practice. Don't harden. Don't build a wall, a fortress around your heart and your hope. You don't need to do that. Just soften and open it back up.
I love that so much. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your energy, your wisdom, for doing this. I will put all of Amy's links in the show notes. Yeah. And so I guess my last question, now that, you know, COVID is a thing, how does that is affecting your retreats? Are they happening again, or are they on pause, or how is that working?
Yeah, so I still run retreats. I just did one in upstate New York last month. So I'm doing less. So I still do a couple a year. And I also do online programs now. And I am also doing group mentorship, teaching people how to date. So learning the skills of dating. So a lot of people after the breakup, they're like, now what? And so I really take them through a process so you can date in a healthy way.
Wow, I love that so much. Okay, I'm going to eat up every single thing on the internet that you have put out. Thank you again so, so much. I think this is going to be so helpful for so many people.
This was so fun. Thanks, Megan.
Of course.
Yay.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.